Poya.
This is Robbie.
Welcome to Uncharted and Eclectic.
And thanks for joining us again.
This week's episode is brought to you by Oracle NetSuite. Oracle NetSuite, I think, solves a really important problem that a lot of startups, business owners, executives face, which is how do you get the information that you need instantly all in one place? Before we upgraded to Oracle NetSuite at my last startup, it used to take us a lot of time to pull the information reports that we needed for our quarterly investment meeting, or the report that we wanted to send to both internal employees as well as stakeholders and shareholders at the end of the month. Upgrade to Oracle NetSuite today so you can get the visibility and control you need over your financials, HR, inventory, and everything you need in one place that you can access instantly. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/scale. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/scale. That is netsuite.com/scale.
Welcome back, everybody. Happy Wednesday, or happy good morning, afternoon, wherever you're listening from. We have an amazing guest, someone I've had the pleasure of working with, Rhonda Larson, on the show. Rhonda, how are you?
Doing great. Happy to be here, Poya.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you. I usually don't do this, but I'll give some context to the listeners of why I invited you. So Rhonda and I had worked together at Hacker Inc. And if you see her, she's smiling because we admired each other in a professional sense, and that we both knew how hard the other person worked at their craft professionally. But this is when I was an individual contributor doing all I can to get the deals through the finish line. And Rhonda's job was to do things that operationally made a lot of sense for the organization and, more importantly, for the company. So anytime there were process changes, I was the knucklehead that was like the first one to resist them. And I really never admired the work that Rhonda and her team were doing until I got older and wiser. And I started to take on manager roles and more things that I'm like, okay, we got to do things that scale. Then I look back, I'm like, oh my God, now I know why she did the things that she was advocating for. And we reconnected maybe 2 years ago on Caltrain, going from San Francisco back home to the peninsula, and the rest is history, as they say. So Rhonda, I can't thank you enough for jumping on the show with us, but usually the way we'd love to have every listener kind of learn from you is getting a really nice bio from you, from your professional background, as well as your personal background. So would love to defer to you to give us some context.
Yeah, hey, thanks Poya. And you know, certainly love that intro, definitely resonates. And one of the great things about Hacker Inc. where it was is you're, you know, right at the beginning of the sales process, and we need rock star sales reps such as you were at the time, and we need to take that energy and scale it. And it was awesome to be able to do that, even if we had a little bit of tension between us, healthy tension, of course. So I was born and raised in North Dakota, and I was super privileged to have two parents that cared for me deeply and really gave me all the advantages that they could afford, along with a deep respect for hard work. And, you know, I think in this day and age, it's super important to acknowledge privilege. And I'm very grateful for what I had growing up. That allowed me the opportunity to go to college. I started with chemistry. I moved on to grad school in chemistry, then to McKinsey, and from McKinsey into tech. And I spent the last couple of decades moving between big companies like NetApp, Yahoo, and LinkedIn, to small companies like Vontu, HackerRank with Poya, and Snowflake. I've largely had the joy of looking after sales ops at most of those places, but I've also dabbled in finance and HR, as well as customer success.
Amazing. Rhonda, I have a question for you, and this is Robbie. I've never been in North Dakota, I'll be honest with you. I've wanted to go. What would you say is like the, if there was like one kind of favorite food or cuisine that is known in North Dakota for like people that are from there, what would you say that is?
Wow. I don't know if you have heard or watched either the TV show or the movie Fargo, but when that
I've seen the movie, I haven't watched the TV show.
When that came up, all my friends who still live there thought it was absolutely horrible and 100% wrong. And having moved away, I could say it was beautiful and on point and just embrace the character. So I'm going to get shot if any of my friends listen to this, but one of the most memorable foods is sometimes called the funeral hot dish, Robbie.
Oh my.
The funeral hot dish. And you know, life and death is a big part of life. And one of the best things about people passing on is it encourages everyone to get together. When everyone got together with my family in North Dakota, you would have a big potluck celebration, and somebody always brought the funeral hot dish, which is macaroni and hamburger and tomato sauce, and it's just very hearty. It keeps you through a North Dakota winter, and it helps, you know, stabilize you when you're having an emotionally hard time. I know it's not super exotic, but it definitely gets the job done.
Amazing. I'm actually really happy to hear that you said that. It kind of reminds me of like Cincinnati chili a little bit. That's like a style of chili where they're like throwing like macaroni on top of it. So that's just some good old like Midwestern eating right there. You gotta love it. Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that. Slightly off topic, but always something I like to learn about cuisine, especially from places I haven't been. The question for you, Rhonda, I tell me about this transition from, I guess, like chemistry. And then I know there's a step in McKinsey in the middle, but to tech, what were some of the things that made you successful in your studies and practitioner in chemistry and as a scientist that are skills that you still carry with you today?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a great question. And I just, you know, I love how life just threads itself through, right? And a lot of people on the surface would say chemistry has nothing to do with tech sales operations. But really it's about solving problems. It's about being a detective. It's about exploring the universe that's in front of you. And so, you know, I went into chemistry quite frankly, because it was practical and employable and I was good at it. And those are highly Midwestern attributes. You know, but when I looked up, I realized like I didn't really want to do chemistry anymore. But luckily, what the PhD program taught me is, you know, to be self-driven, to find my own work, to find my own problems, to solve my own problems, obviously with the help of phenomenal mentors. Shout out to Professor Mahdi Abu Omar, who's now at Santa Barbara. But you know, just really navigating that and learning how to put the basic toolkit together to solve problems and pulled that over. You know, I knew I was kind of done with chemistry. McKinsey was a great avenue into the business world, got my functional MBA there. I just happened to get thrown on to high-tech sales studies when I was at McKinsey. And so that's how I ended up in sales operations. But it's really about that problem solving and helping people. That's the common thread amongst my whole career.
And that's what sales is about. So absolutely. And you've been very, very good at it. I'm fast tracking here because when you bring up the fact that, hey, I'm trying to help people, sometimes in order to help people, they need to be bought in and you need to get them to kind of recognize the why and do it. And it goes back to the resistance I used to have. And I really didn't realize until I became, frankly, a head of sales or a consultant and why that was so important, because you want to do things that are repeatable and scalable. And frankly, if people are listening to this and they're like, what the heck does that mean? That means like, if you're going to hire somebody, you give them like the guidelines, they're able to kind of repeat. That's what franchises do. It's no different in frankly, any job, but I never really realized that until I had the incentives aligned for me to selfishly kind of follow through. And funny enough, as a consultant today, a lot of my income comes from just reminding people the same thing. Let's document, let's do things that scale, so on and so forth. So my question to you, Rhonda, is over the years, when you come across knuckleheads like me, how do you get them bought in? How do you kind of go through that resistance? How do you get people that you're trying to help, if your customers are sales, to be like, like if we have process changes or whatever, what advice do you have for people listening, whether it's sales process or anything else, if they're trying to kind of get people to move, what do you recommend?
Yeah, well, first I have to acknowledge I clearly failed at Hacker English. I'm going to go back to our mutual CEO at HackerRank's very, very long list of books you should read and call out Simon Sinek's Start With Why, right? Start with why, make it about the person whose life you're trying to get to change, however small or big that process is. If the sales rep or whomever you're working with can't see the value of that change for themselves, then you'll never get them to do it. And I'll give you a quick story about a time when I worked at Vontu. So this was back in 2007 when we still had on-premise software, and we literally had to ship servers out to our customers or our prospects to do the demo. And when I showed up, we were losing sales because we couldn't get them servers. So, you know, what I needed to do is I needed to get the sales rep and the SE to do a bunch of administrative work to organize that demo and keep it on track and keep the servers coming back when we needed them. And I started with why. You need servers to make your sale. We can't just buy an infinite number of servers. Therefore, I need to understand what your process is, and I need you to be beholden to that process. And we set that up together. So got them bought in at the front end, let them help me create it and build it. And then they were happy to execute it. And I'm happy to say, up until the time we got bought by Symantec, we never had a server shortage again.
I just want to thank you for sharing what on-premise is with Robbie. You know, these guys have they have no idea how lucky they are in the world of SaaS and cloud. So it's a lesson for you, Robbie.
But a wee infant in this technology world. That's a really cool story, Rhonda. I appreciate you sharing that. One, you mentioned getting, as you think about like process change and change management, you mentioned a couple things that I really liked, starting with why. I think makes a ton of sense. Why does this matter for the business, for the team, for the individual? And starting there and getting everybody to buy into that. And then you also mentioned like getting contribution and collaboration and input from the sales team. Now, there is a balance, I'm sure, that you have to strike there. As somebody who's led sales teams, I'm always somewhere in between keep the blinders on like a horse jockey to just like sprint down the track at maximum speed and let's build this thing together. And my kind of management style falls somewhere in the middle. Do you have any like guidance or best practices for, you know, commercial leaders or operations leaders thinking about how to get feedback from the sales team without it being too much of a distraction when you think about process changes and just kind of what you've seen over the years work best for you?
Yeah, Robbie, I mean, that's such a great call out. And, definitely every company is unique in terms of its personality and its willingness to embrace the concept of process. You know, I can tell you at HackerRank, process was an absolutely evil word, right? And so even entering into a conversation with Poya at the time would have just shut him down. And that's probably why we didn't do a whole lot of starting with why, and I probably did too much innovation on my own that he wasn't bought into. On the converse side was Snowflake, right? And they're at a little bit different stages. When I joined HackerRank, there were 25 sales reps. When I joined Snowflake, there were 50, but they were ready to run. They knew they had to scale. They knew growth was the primary problem. They had the sales process sort of tuned. I mean, it would continue to tune it, of course, and get better and better and better, but they had a number of high-performing sales reps that knew they were winning, and they wanted to take that. They were ready to take that and cycle, rinse, repeat. So net-net, like, you have to, first of all, look at your organization and say, where are they in that sort of storming, forming, norming evolution? And are they prepared to think about the scale, or are they still really in the innovative mindset? If they're in the innovative mindset, you have to do a better job than I did with HackerRank. You have to pull in But maybe it's just the VP of sales. As a sales ops leader, maybe I just talk to you, Robbie, the head of sales, and you maybe pull some things out of your team. It's small enough, you know what's going on, and we keep it pretty simple and scripted. And then when we roll it out, we make sure that we start with the why there, and that there's a clear win to them, why it's going to help them move faster versus slow them down. However, if they've moved on to the snowflake stage where they know that growth has to happen, then you can pull in a couple of your top performers, and they're super excited to sell their ideas. Like salespeople love when they're winning, and they love to tell that story. They don't think anyone else could ever do what they're doing, so they're not afraid of sharing their secrets. And it's a great place to kind of go. So I kind of, you know, I hope that helps sort of take a pulse check on that.
It does. And the first thing I thought when you, so yeah, that's perfect. And I think a helpful guideline for any leader thinking about how to incorporate sales reps and best practices. When you talked about, you know, salespeople who are performing well, really want to tell that story. I think about Poya. I think about Poya giving me a call when things are going well. He always seems to have a lot of stories to tell me at the end of the month when he's, you know, and he's doing really well. But we'll leave that aside for now. So you mentioned a couple. I mean, Snowflake was the IPO of 2020, home run company. You've had some amazing experiences along the way. One question I have for you is looking to the earlier stage companies, thinking about, you know, as CEOs, founders, VPs of sales, CROs, whomever, thinking about when should I make that first, you know, head of sales ops hire? What kind of guidance do you have for folks there that are kind of earlier in the journey, but are thinking about, we want to make this investment now and get a leader into place who can help us really operationalize these things, maybe before we get to 50 reps or even before 25 reps? When is the stage when companies should tend to think about that? And like, do you have any kind of framework that you might recommend?
What a good question. Like, I'm always impressed with Robbie when he asks like these like weird out of the blue questions. So kudos to you, but I'll add a little layer to that, Rhonda, especially when you work with freaking engineering or technical founders, right? It's like, oh my God, like what's the lagging KPIs? What's the ROI? Like, how does this tie back to revenue? It's like, come on, chill. Like, let me just, trust me, let's do this. So if you don't have somebody that's like friendly and like willing to kind of give you that break, and you got to freaking come up with a calculus algorithm to allow you to come up with the ROI, what are the lagging KPIs? Because, or leading KPIs, I don't know which one is which right now, but the point I'm trying to make is sometimes it takes a while, right, to see that, especially when you have long sales cycles, to see that effort come to fruition. So just curious on like both questions, what you add to that in terms of context.
Yeah, super, super great questions. And I, you know, I wish I had a magic bullet here. But I, unfortunately, and I think I've seen some blogs about this in the Saster sphere and some other startup areas, but it really, and you are touching on it, it comes down to the personality of the founding team. And very particularly, the bias towards operations for that founding team, as well as the initial sales rep. So, you know, when I look at HackerRank, one of the challenges that we had there was that we had a very, very junior team. It was your stereotypical, you know, 25-year-old startup CEO, an incredible genius, lovely person, super, super fortunate to have worked there. You know, but he was learning a lot about the business on the way and didn't know upfront a lot of, you know, what makes a good salesperson, what makes a good marketing person, what is marketing, what is finance, how do we do these things? And he was pretty smart about bringing in the people to do it. But we probably should have started with sales ops a lot earlier there, more senior sales ops earlier, to get that strategy around sales operations that's super critical to laying the foundation right. Now, conversely, go over to Snowflake. And again, I went into Snowflake much, much later. The company was 200 people and the sales team was 50. But that team you know, was founded by Mike Speiser, and Mike Speiser pulled in Benoit and Thibault and the other founders to do an amazingly brilliant job there. But Mike's got massive depth and experience in running and building a sales team. So that's his focus. He went out and he hired Chris Degnan, who's the CRO there today, an incredibly brilliant, amazing salesperson, but also incredibly operationally minded, right? And so what you have to do is you have to look at who your salesperson is, where his or her strengths lie, and do they need that operational partner right from the beginning, or are they of the mindset to be able to start to set it up initially? And that's really a question you're asking as a CEO throughout growing your business, right? When you start a company, you're one person. And then you add, if you're the engineer, you add the CEO. If you're the CEO, you add the engineer. But like you add the people that you need as the functions that are necessary become more needed. And the staff that you have in place don't have that knowledge or capacity to pick it up. So there's not an unambiguous rule book in my mind. It really depends on who that founding team is and what they look like.
Love it. It's as soon as you brought this up, and I've listened to a lot of episodes with the CRO, Chris at Snowflake. And the number one thing he touches upon, which you're touching upon, is recruit for the things that you're not good at, right? Double down on your strengths. And I think he always talks about it's enterprise sales. That's what he's good at. And whether it's operations or mid-market or transactional sales, like double down and hire people that are better at you and just let them do their thing. So the question I have is sales ops. When I look at hiring that, I have no freaking idea what you look for, right? Like for a first-time sales rep, I can talk about all day, first VP of sales, I know exactly what to look for, characteristics. What the heck do you look for in a sales ops person, especially if it's the first hire you're making?
Degnan's first hire was a woman by the name of Christina Dudley, who's a phenomenal person and really was brought in to build out their Salesforce instance and to do some basic reporting and to help Chris manage the process of his sales. And that was 1,000% perfect. And then when he brought me in, they had evolved enough that they needed that strategic mindset. Now, other sales leaders, you know, potentially like a HackerRank example where you've got less familiarity with sales and what it is and how to build out the process, you might want to bring in that strategic leader right at the front. Hopefully you can find someone who's got strategy and also the willingness to roll up their sleeves so can do the Salesforce admin and the analytics all on their own. But if not, there are always vendors that you can engage to provide that. So really, you know, again, it depends on who you're complimenting, which person you need to bring in the door first.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think one of the trends I'm starting to see more and more, Rhonda, is CROs having like a more operational, like more of a sales ops or operational background. And you mentioned that about the Snowflake CRO. So I'm not surprised to hear that, you know, the CRO of the biggest IPO of 2020 had a very comprehensive knowledge set regarding sales ops. And I think one thing we're starting to see is with so much of sales moving away from the field and kind of the art of the steak dinner and the sort of wining and dining and selling software on-prem, like you were describing earlier, to more of the sales approach or a little bit metric is becoming more and more important for sales leaders, sales ops leaders alike. So it's cool to hear. Well, listen, Rhonda, this has been incredibly fun. I'm really charged up and I want to go sharpen my sales op knife and get a lot better at all these things. And I'm so glad that we were able to pick your brain about it. Our closing question that we like to ask all of our guests is, if you were to kind of go back to North Dakota, meet up with your younger self and give yourself kind of one piece of advice as you look back on the journey, I would love to know like what that piece of advice might be to your younger self.
Yeah, thanks, Robbie. And I think it comes back to two pieces of advice I have gotten. One was from Manas Manias, my boss at Yahoo. He said to me, your boss has nothing to do with you working on weekends. And another was actually from a HackerRank colleague as I was leaving. They said, now we'll never know what's going on. And if you put those two things together, know that you alone are fully responsible for how much you invest in your career, and knowledge is power. And the more you share it, the more collaboration and communication in combination with your sweat equity will determine your success.
Boom. I love that. Your boss is not the one who determines whether or not you work on the weekend. That is a you choice. I love that. Well, Rhonda, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure getting to hear you and Poya go out a little bit on your guys' relationship back in the day at HackerRank, and Poya maybe being a little bit reluctant on the operational changes that you were working so hard to implement. It's always fun. Rhonda, if folks want to get in touch and ask questions about your background or sales ops or just connect in general, one, would you be open to that? And two, what's the best way to connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely open to it. I love talking about sales ops. Obviously, since I'm at LinkedIn, the best way to find me is on LinkedIn. It's just Rhonda Larson on LinkedIn. And if that doesn't work for you, you can always email me at rhonda.k.larson@gmail.com.
Amazing. Well, Rhonda, thanks for your generosity. Appreciate your time.
This week's episode is brought to you by Oracle NetSuite. Oracle NetSuite, I think, solves a really important problem that a lot of startups, business owners, executives face, which is how do you get the information that you need instantly all in one place? Before we upgraded to Oracle NetSuite at my last startup, it used to take us a lot of time to pull the information reports that we needed for our quarterly investment meeting, or the report that we wanted to send to both internal employees as well as stakeholders and shareholders at the end of the month. Upgrade to Oracle NetSuite today so you can get the visibility and control you need over your financials, HR, inventory, and everything you need in one place that you can access instantly. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/scale. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/scale. That is netsuite.com/scale.